Hi, everyone.
Andrea, welcome home.
Uh-oh. I can see Ted, you're talking, but I cannot hear you.
Uh-oh. Can anybody else hear me?
Yep.
Let me try to log off and log back on. Or wait, let's try this first. I think I just needed to turn up my volume. Sorry about that.
That's an easy one and you figured it out. So that's perfect. I was just saying, welcome home. I know you've been traveling, so.
Yeah.
Iowa.
Thank you. It's coming off some jet lag from being in Hawaii, but I can't complain with the ability to get away for a little bit. But yeah, I want to be mindful of everyone's time. So we can go ahead and get started with the July 6th meeting. I know the first thing on the agenda is the Heath management plan.
Yes, I'll kick that off if I might, Andrea. With just a real brief introduction. I think we'll hear, and everyone is probably aware, that the Canadian goose is one of the success stories of wildlife management. Their populations have really increased over the years, which is a great thing in a lot of ways, but it can be a little challenging in other ways. And one of those ways is that if they a lot of them take up residence near airports, they can become a bit of a hazard, a concern to the traveling public. And so Canadian geese started populating Waterworks Park some time ago. And then in the early 2000s, Des Moines Waterworks was approached with a request to manage the population of Canadian geese in our park because of the proximity to the airport. So that is why we started doing it. There are a lot of other folks who do it for a lot of other reasons related to just the number of geese and their droppings and all of those kind of things. But ours has always primarily been driven by our proximity to the airport and concerns there. I'm gonna let Jessica and Andy Kellner, who you may remember from his presentation related to deer management in the park, I'm going to let them tell the story. I don't want to steal their thunder, but we've been doing some things historically that were fairly effective, but there are other ideas that are maybe more effective and maybe more palatable too from the treatment of the goose perspective. So with that introduction, I think Jessica, I'll hand it to you and you guys can proceed as you see fit.
All right. Well, let me get the presentation up and Andy is going to kick off and start the presentation for us. Can everybody see this okay?
Yes.
Perfect.
There you go. Yep.
All right. Andy, I'll let you take it from here.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for the introduction, Ted. I appreciate the chance to be back talking to the board at Waterworks here again, this time with our feathered friends. So I'll just get right into it and I'll touch base with some of the things that Ted mentioned. And obviously there'll be time for questions afterwards or whenever, if you need to get a hold of me, email or phone. I love talking about Canada geese. So Ted's exactly right. They are definitely considered one of the major success stories in the conservation world. And you talk to anybody out there and some people love the geese and some people don't like the geese so much. And in my role, I experience both. But I think it is really important to touch base on the fact that this is a species that was gone from Iowa at one point. And in the 70s, there was some reintroduction efforts to bring the geese back and involved many different partnering agencies. And at the time, the Iowa Conservation Commission. And it really was a successful reintroduction. Now, there was some unintended side adventures, let's call them. One of those being the geese, being the adaptable species that they are, utilizing urban landscapes. If you look back in the history of city design and city planning, we really saw a big push starting probably in the 90s, where all of a sudden a lot of these stormwater retention ponds from construction sites and development sites were retained and utilized as a water feature for its aesthetic qualities and park-like settings. I mean, there's other aspects with golf courses and things like that. But if you look at the cityscape in the Des Moines Metro, it really is this very interesting mosaic of water bodies and mowed turf grass, which is the perfect habitat for Canada geese. And Canada geese are something that are going to remain to be in the landscape of Iowa. And so as long as there are these landscapes that attract them to certain areas, then we're going to see them showing up in these urban areas. So there's conflict that can occur with certain different aspects of where the geese like to call home in their habitat and what people also like. We've focused in with some additional research, and we've partnered with Iowa State University, and they had a great grad student that did some research with actually GPS collars. We got a lot of very interesting information about the patterns and how susceptible to hunting and those things Canada geese are in the urban landscape, and then also how they react to our certain management styles and techniques. Next slide, please. So like Ted mentioned, there's a lot of different ways that geese interact with people in an urban environment. I've found geese nesting in so many different types of places across the metro area. And sometimes that itself can lead to conflict with aggression during that nesting season or brood rearing, fecal deposition along trails or beaches, damage to golf courses or turf grass. But I think Ted really hit the nail on the head with airport safety. If you look at where Des Moines Waterworks lays in concert to the Des Moines International Airport, it is something that we need to be aware of. A lot of folks at a federal level look at bird usage in an area going out 3 to 5 miles from any airport. Obviously, Waterworks lays far closer than that, anywhere from, 3/4 mile, I think, to the end of the runway from Des Moines Waterworks property. So along with that too, I think it's always important to realize that time of year is an important part of the conversation. A lot of what we're seeing for use at Des Moines Waterworks is that spring and summer with the family groups and previous nesting that's occurring either in the area, specifically on the ground or adjacent properties. Next slide, please. So just to recap a little bit again what Ted mentioned, there was a push in the early 2000s centered around these airports, looking at getting different entities involved and on board with doing a little bit more aggressive goose management in the area because of a higher number. We're not talking super high numbers, but a little bit higher number and concern for safety because of the airport in relation to these places. Most of these efforts at Waterworks is really focused on lethal control. There's been a number of roundups, which would occur mid-June to right about now, where all the birds are herded into a pen and the adults are taken to a locker for processing. And then the goslings are translocated to different counties. Most of the goslings from Waterworks have ended up down at 12 Mile or 3 Mile Lake. So there are several counties away. Typically, geese return to the area where they learn to fly. So that's the reason for that. There's also been annual nest manipulations. Waterworks has been a great partner because Don Miller there with the grounds crew went through the certification process as a nuisance wildlife control operator and then the subsequent training with the DNR for doing nest manipulations. So that's been a really good partnership working forward. And that focuses at least on the birds right there in Waterworks Park.
Can I ask a quick question? I don't understand what nest manipulation is.
Sure, I'll go into that just a little bit here.
Okay.
So in typical nest manipulation events would be egg oiling. So the nest is located and documented where it is. And then once the female has laid all her eggs, oil coats the eggs. You go out there and apply oil to them, which that stops the progress of the egg going forward. It basically stops the whole process right there, allowing the female to remain sitting on the nest like she would be incubating the eggs. And then you go back later after she is no longer able to lay any more eggs. There's a certain window we're looking for her to be incubating or sitting on the nest for about 2 weeks. and then you'd collect the eggs and remove them. Some of our studies have shown, like I said, this urban research we've done, looking at, instead of going through the oiling process, letting the bird incubate the eggs for about 2 weeks and then just simply removing the nest can actually have an impact on those hens, where they'll hang around for a little while, but then actually go on an additional migration farther north. So it's something where it moves the bird out of the area too. So we're doing a little bit of that with Don at Waterworks Park. So that's when we're talking nest manipulations, we're either talking egg oiling or a nest removal project. And now, like I said, that really helps with the birds that are right there at Waterworks. We've seen a really big reduction in the number of birds nesting from the early 2000s to now. In a typical year, we're talking less than a dozen nests that we're encountering out there that Don is finding in those places. A lot of them center around those east ponds where shrub removals and bank management has occurred. And I think that's a big part of it, is just the active continuing to do it over the long term. However, what I'd point out is that if you go out there right now to Waterworks, you're still going to see a substantial number of geese. And that's because there's a lot of birds that nest upriver or in other places nearby. And after they hatch, the habitat is still very appealing to the geese for that brood rearing aspect of the goslings being able to move easily from the water to an area to forage on mowed grass. And so we're getting a big group of families from all over the area that move in there. So if you want to go to the next slide, that's a little bit of what I want to talk about as we go forward today. This isn't just Waterworks. I've been trying to take a pretty proactive approach with a lot of different partnering agencies in the area. Sometimes it's just me responding to private individuals or businesses, but I'm also working with the city of Des Moines. They're currently reviewing a plan that I put together this spring that's more wide and encompassing for the whole city. And then I also highlighted specific places where they were worried about. We focus largely on habitat work, aversive conditioning, scare tactics, or harassment, you might call that, and food handouts. That's a big component of it as well. Last year, I met with the new ranger over at Easter Lake and discussed options with them, and they were going to explore some things that they could be doing right around that beach area. And I just want everybody to know that we're not zooming in on one particular entity. I really think this is a bigger scale, because otherwise the birds just bounce around to a different place. So I think that's important to consider. Next slide, please. So just the basics, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this, but just one of these are the things I hit in any of my goose plans and when I'm talking to people. So one of the big things, and the biggest attractant to wildlife for an area, is food. And so removing artificial handouts, people feeding bread or corn or popcorn, it's not healthy for the birds. It's not good for their gastrointestinal tract. It really removes that fear factor, both on the human side and the goose side. So then all of a sudden, when the geese are more aggressive and people don't realize that they run up to them, well, then you have conflict occur. So I think this is a big thing, and I'm really pushing it with the city of Des Moines on a big scale. There's some areas where it's really bad. The Glendale Cemetery is a good example where this has just gotten out of control, and people are going down there with bags of bird food and dumping it out there just to take pictures. And it's something that we do have to keep in the back of our mind. I know that there's park rules at Des Moines Waterworks, but doing a little concerted effort to make people aware of it again, I think, is important. Scare tactics are important to consider, putting that fear back into the birds. They can be very successful. There's some cooperators that use dogs in the area, which is very successful. Pyrotechnics, loud noises, that sort of stuff. Lethal management, like we've discussed, for what's going on at Waterworks, is something to consider. It's definitely something that can be a very touchy subject, and is something that I don't think is going to be the right case for every scenario, but it is something that we should be considering and mindful of, especially hunting. There is hunting that occurs within city limits of Des Moines for geese, and it does have an impact. Our studies have shown that. But the big thing I like to look at is, why are the birds there in the first place? What is appealing in the area to these birds? Next slide, please. So what do I mean when I say goose habitat management? like I said before, geese really like long sight distances to look for predators and know they're safe so that they can easily move from water to the areas where they graze. So that's the big thing to focus on. How do we change that visibility? One of the big concepts that a lot of people use, whether we're talking like this picture is from a suburb of Chicago, where they're just incorporating that right from the get-go with any of these new developments going in, where they put a strip of native prairie right along the shoreline. And what that does is it impedes the movement for those geese and makes it less appealing to them, which seems a little bit backwards since that's a natural landscape that we're implementing. But the birds really like that open mowed grass right down to the shoreline. So anything we can do along those standpoints is great to reduce access. There's other benefits that you are well aware of with doing prairie plantings. And we can be creative about it. I don't think there's a one size fits all approach. I think keeping in mind that there's other ways to pursue it is important to realize too, in finding out what works best for a site. Next slide, please.
I'm gonna go over a few of the design aspects of the buffer and prairie strips. And in this slide here, you can see a variety of ornamental grasses. These can be used instead of prairie flowers as well. You get a lot of texture, variety, color. You can use varieties of Indian grass, little stem, big blue stem, Cydodes grama. These are some of the varieties found in these pictures. Or you can go another approach with prairie plantings, including a huge variety of prairie flowers. You can see these are beautiful landscapes next to a bike trail. And the top photo is a prairie strip in the middle of a crop field. So a variety of plants could be used. And I want to note a few that you might recognize. These are some of the more common ones that you see in these prairie plantings, as well as in home landscapes. You can see coneflower, liatris, ornamental grasses, as I said earlier, including the blue stem, the little and big blue stem, Indian grass, native sedges can be used, as well as a variety of butterfly weed and asters. And these are attractants, as Andy stated earlier, these will attract wildlife, insects, their natural habitats. So we're going to be inviting, we'll deter the geese, but also invite other animals into our landscape and insects. And before I get into the site plan of this next slide, I want to note several other individuals that have been instrumental in this process. Andy approached me earlier this winter to kind of pitch this idea to me. And I told Andy, I said, this is awesome. You know, I like it. I love anything that's going to add flowers, beautify our landscape here in the park, but I'm going to need a few other people to help with the design aspect, create a site plan for us. So he recruited several individuals, Jennifer Welch from the NRCS, Kelsey Flem from the DNR, as well as Tim Youngquist from Iowa State University. And you might recognize Tim's name. He is the person that designed the prairie strips out at Maffitt Reservoir that we have below the dam and on the east side of the park in our farm field. So wasn't sure how well acquainted you are with him, but he has done a lot of work out there. But he actually laid out this site plan. And this is when they came down, we met in late March. We actually met in person, took a look at the possible sites where we're seeing a lot of the high numbers of geese. And this is the main site that I wanted to start with. This is actually just across from my maintenance shop here at the east node of the park. And it is the basin retention ponds that you see every day if you drive through the park, where we have a lot of recreational use, a lot of fishing, people walking, picnicking. And it's right across from the amphitheater. So we are seeing a lot of geese transfer from these ponds over into the amphitheater and venture into other areas of the park. And so this first plan here, he came up with a site plan that will allow walking paths. It's approximately just under 2 acres. And in this, I'll kind of highlight here, he has incorporated some mowing paths. So this path along the edge of the basin pond is a 20-foot mowed path. That's about one pass with our batwing mower that still allows recreational use of the area. Fishing is the primary use, as well as people could walk along the edge of the water. We usually have picnic tables here. We will still incorporate all that. But then he also created curvilinear walking trails through the prairie. So the purple or grayish color is the prairie planting, but he incorporated paths through there. So it invites people to wander through, venture, see the flowers, wander through, see what insects they can find. I think this would be a great opportunity for families to venture through. You know, we have the walking paths of the amphitheater that are highly used, but this would be another element to add to that. He also gave me another draft of that area that is a little downsized. It's a smaller prairie in the middle, and it actually gave more green space to the area. So you see he did still include the 20-foot wide path along the edge of the water. So we could still incorporate fishing, picnicking, but then he just had a few pathways cut into the prairie. And then we also took a look at Basin 17. This is the large pond in our event field in the west area of the park across from the shelter. And that is another area where we see a high amount of bees congregating throughout the season. This is a little bit bigger prairie strip for us. It's just under 11 acres, but there's a lot of room out there. The total acreage of the field is around 72 acres. So we do have the room to incorporate a bigger prairie. He didn't put in this site plan, but I envision seeing paths cut through here, just like in the previous slide, to allow visitors to come in, view the area, venture through. Preparation and establishment of these sites, it can all be done by ground staff. That's the great thing about this. We have the equipment, we have the knowledge. You can see here, this is, I just want to make note, this is a picture I took last week across from my shop in the basin retention area. There's probably 100 geese over there venturing around, crossing the road. They're there every day. They were there this morning to greet me when I pulled into work. So it's an ongoing issue, and I think the buffer strips would be a great addition to deter the geese in this area. In order to establish these plantings, the first step is chemical treatment. We would have to kill out the existing grass and vegetation that's there. And then the best practice is a dormant seeding in late fall before frost. But we can also, if timing didn't allow that or weather, you can do a spring seeding. And then it does take several years for establishment. So you are going to see the first couple of years, the areas will look a little rough. You will see some weed. We will have to do some mowing to control the weeds, maybe some chemical spot treatment. And then after several years, once those plants get going and are established and start to spread and develop, you will see a nice planting in the area. And I will say, you know, these are all flood areas. And so when we do nail down a design and plant selection, we will be looking at flood resilient species. In my experience, just with other plantings here in the landscape, a lot of the perennial grasses are what hold up during floods, and we can clean those up a lot easier than some of the tender perennials. I did a little cost analysis for these two site areas, and I did ask when we met in March, you know, are there any funding opportunities? Is there anything available out there? And I did have Kelsey Flem did recommend Prairie Partners. They fund up to 50% for the cost of the seed, up to $5,000. If you do have them as a funding source, they do have a 10-year maintenance agreement, and you do have to select the seed from, they have several recommended growers in the state of Iowa that you do have to source the seed from. And so I did a little cost estimate with one of those companies, the Ion Exchange, just to kind of see what this would cost. And for site one, the basin ponds across from in the east node of the park, it would be $90 per pound with a seed rate of 10 pounds per acre. And so you're looking at a total cost for seed for that area of approximately $900. And that is I specified a prairie birth mix. So that would have perennial grasses, prairie grasses, as well as some flowers intermixed in that seed mix. And then the site two, which is the west pond in the back of the park, I did primarily a prairie grass seed mix at that site. And it was $25 per pound with a seed rate again of 10 pounds per acre. And that would be an approximate cost of $27.50 to see that 11 acres. Andy actually shared with me last week an interesting study by Adam Janke from Iowa State University regarding, he did an analysis of with farmers who have installed these prairie strips to see what is the maintenance cost versus just mowing turf. And it was very interesting. If anybody's interested, you know, I can send you the link to that. But the average maintenance cost of turf is around $600 an acre. And average maintenance cost of a prairie pollinator garden is $100 an acre. So there's a huge decrease in maintenance costs with that. I just feel like this is a win-win situation. You know, it's an idea I'm excited about. I think it'd be great to incorporate some of these prairie strips into the park. My staff has asked for years if, you know, we can have prairie plantings or a monarch garden. And I think this is the opportunity for that. So I'm going to open it up to any questions you guys have for Andy or I at this time?
I'll just add that I agree. I think this is a win-win. And I think this, you know, putting in buffer strips along our waterways has a lot of different benefits beyond just dealing with goose management. I think it sets a good example for what we'd like to see in other waterways from a water quality standpoint. As well as that cost savings of maintenance of having pollinator and prairie plantings within the park. I think there's also an educational opportunity here. So there's a lot of benefit to going this route and trying to solve a problem with a solution that gives us a lot of opportunities. I don't have any specific questions. I'll open it to others who may.
Oh my gosh, I have a lot of questions, and now's my chance to ask questions about the geese. So I didn't understand, do they leave in the winter? It seems like I've seen them around. That's one question I have. My second question, and I wondered about this, do people eat these geese? So maybe you could address that. I know you said in there that in your lethal management that they're euthanized. So, because I wondered about hunting, like what we do with the deer. I just didn't know if eating was something that people do with all of these geese.
Yeah, no, those are good questions. So I'll start with, do they leave? The answer is sometimes. So it really depends, right? I'm a biologist, so I'm not going to give you a straight answer, I guess. it really depends on the year and the weather and what's going on. Now, there's places in Des Moines or the metro area, if they're keeping the water body open with an aerator or something, the geese will stay there all winter long. That's another thing I key in on with habitat and managing it, is if you can turn off an aerator, do it, because otherwise the birds are going to stay around. So they're staying based on what's available for food and what's available for water. So if we get really cold temperatures and if we get snow, then a lot of times that will push the birds that are in the metro area to migrate farther south. If those crop fields that they tend to feed on during the fall and winter are covered in snow and it's harder to get to the waste grain, then that's one factor. And if the ponds freeze over, that's the second factor. Now, if that's not happening or water staying open, especially along a river corridor like where Waterworks sits, that's going to be attractive for them to stay put. And then what happens is all the birds from farther north, the ones that would be calling actual Canada, so the true Canadian geese up in Manitoba or birds from Minnesota or Wisconsin, as they're moving south in their migration, if they see big groups of other birds, they're going to pile in with those birds. And so that's why during the winter, you see kind of an increase in the number of birds that are present in the city. So it really is dependent on the weather and what's available for food for them. Now, as far as do people eat them? Yes. Now there's some old myths and some people that'll say, no, it's a nasty goose, you don't want to eat it. I happen to be rather partial to goose. I think it's really great. I think you can make pastrami out of it, and it's great. So when we do, when there's lethal management that involves a roundup and removal of adult geese this time of year, we have a few options by the DNR Canada Goose policy. The most palatable by far is that if they are to be removed, they're taken to a locker and processed, and then they're given to through the food bank, taken to a local food pantry and donated. The cost of that processing usually falls back on the requesting entity. So 3 or 4 years ago was the last one we did at Des Moines Waterworks. And at that time, the bill came back to Waterworks. Waterworks paid the processing bill, and then the food got donated to the food pantry so people could eat them. I didn't really hit on it with my things, but if you go down and look through the positives on why people do like geese, the outdoor recreation and hunting side of it is a really big draw. Geese are a very popular animal for hunters. And in waterfowl hunting in general, those last few years, it's been really interesting in Iowa. The harvest of geese has actually gone above mallards, which mallards is by far typically your most harvested waterfowl species. So it is something that is very cherished by waterfowl hunters, and not only in Iowa, but in many other states too, because their migration path takes them down the whole flyway.
So I had another question, and maybe this isn't for you, but I do a lot of walking, and that goose poop is very greasy and icky. I don't know how you manage that or clean it up. I know that's not geese management, but that goose poop management. So I have a question about that.
It can be tough. And maybe, Jessica, I don't know if you guys have designed anything, but I know sometimes folks will have like the roller brushes on the front of skid loaders or something that they'll use once it dries out. Now, if it stays wet, you're right, it's messy. And I'm not going to pretend to say that it's clean, it's feces. So rain events definitely help. But when things dry out, it can be fairly straightforward to remove with that sort of equipment. And I've seen some people kind of customize some different setups.
Yeah, we just use a broom attachment on our skid loader for the roadways or the wider paths here in the park, bike trails, or a backpack blower broom is typically what we do. The seasonals do a lot of cleanup, especially over at the amphitheater. And yeah. Ted can probably attest the main office has a few frequent flyers in the parking lot. That was an issue this winter, actually. The geese didn't really leave here. So they're always a pest.
And then when you were talking about aversive conditions, I had this great idea where we zone people who want to set off fireworks near birds that we want to get rid of.
Perfect. Last year, I haven't had a call yet this year. Last year, I got a call from a guy who was concerned about geese and too close to his place. On July 2nd, I said, well, the 4th is coming up. And I talked to them next week, and sure enough, they were all gone.
So. Well, since it's illegal in the city, and we know how people follow that law, I thought, well, maybe zoning is a better idea. I don't think I have any more geese questions.
I guess I do have one that just came to mind as we were talking. You said you were working with the city of Des Moines, and I'm trying to picture, it's been a while since I've walked over around Grays Lake, but they do have buffer strips along at least the one side of the lake.
So bad over there.
Are they doing similar things to so that we're just not kind of moving the geese around?
That'll be a really good conversation to have with the city of Des Moines. So on the list of places they wanted me to specifically focus on, Grays Lake didn't ever come up. And it's been an interesting thing that the geese just haven't preferred that over there. And I should take a stronger look at why, whether it's the local eagles helping out with the predator presence, or because waterworks is such an attractive thing that they maybe some of them nest in Grays Lake and then come right over. Excuse me. I'm not entirely sure, but it wasn't really on their radar. But as we're going about this, it would behoove us to be in touch with partners and to talk to them about it, make sure things are going on both sides of the street there.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of those private large campuses get just lots and lots of of geese, and I don't know if they're involved in managing it. It would seem like they'd want to get rid of them.
We get quite a few phone calls, and there's some folks who are licensed as nuisance wildlife control operators in the city that run a business doing goose harassment and hazing, and they keep pretty busy with some of those big campuses. In a lot of those situations, the geese actually nest up if there's a flat-topped roof nearby. They'll nest up on there and then hop down after hatch, and then they, the same time of year right now with these family groups, they really group up in those areas.
Well, yeah, and I absolutely agree with all the things that Andrea said. I think this is a real opportunity to do some water quality examples and leading some beautification, a lot of good things out of this. So I say go for it. Mm-hmm. Be great.
And the cost doesn't seem too... It really doesn't seem like much at all to have this be the solution that we look towards.
No, and there would be, you know, some maintenance with my staff. There will be labor involved in some of this, but now that we have approval, I can look more in depth on the cost. You know, there's other sources besides the Ion Exchange. I just chose them because I recognize their name and we're somewhat familiar with them, but Jennifer Welch might have some ideas too. Now that we've presented, I'll be in contact with her because she was very interested in helping and assisting with this. So,
and I would just throw out there too that other nonprofit partners might be interested in helping out too. In the past, the North Pope chapter of Pheasants Forever has thought it would be great to do like a kids' day with doing some seeding. And that would be a way to increase your diversity or maybe your wildflowers and some cost savings there. So, there's other options there as well.
Some offsetting cost savings too. I just think it's a neat idea, and I like it better than harvesting the eggs, and I think it's a neat idea. So I'm glad there's support and we'll keep going on it.
Well, thank you very much for having me with this. And like I mentioned before, if any questions do come up, I'm always happy to talk geese and that sort of stuff or whatever other animal. So feel free to reach out anytime. But yeah, I appreciate the chance to talk about this. And I appreciate that Jessica and her staff is excited about the opportunity to do it too. Some places I go, they're not interested at all. So I think it helps really get to the heart of the issue, which is encouraging to me.
What's our next animal? We did deer, now we did geese.
Raccoon. You pick it. We'll figure it out.
The raccoon.
Raccoons, Andy.
Yeah. Okay, I'll put together a show.
Andy, thanks for your time. As always, we appreciate your expertise and your willingness to visit with the board.
Sure. Thank you very much. I'll talk with you later.
Thank you. Sounds good.
And so that was the only thing on the agenda today that I recall. I'm trying to get to my Adobe screen here to pull up the agenda. And our community relations meeting has been canceled. So I guess that just leaves the CEO comments, Ted.
Yeah, Andrea, I want to share something very topical. Jessica, I don't know if you can quit sharing your screen. That might be appropriate. Something very topical today. You know, we've talked a lot about water quality in the Des Moines River, and we've been monitoring it very closely, and it's been bouncing around a little bit on us, but primarily cooperating. The raccoon has been doing a nice job, but today, for the first time this year, we measured detectable microcystin concentrations in the Raccoon River, which we are using. And not just detectable, but 0.7 parts per billion, which the detection limit is 0.3. So it's been below 0.3 until today. It spiked up to 0.7, which is somewhat concerning. You know, we usually try to avoid any source that has that concentration of microcystin, but we are using the raccoon today. I know we got that information just about 2:45 today. And so the operations team was going to meet and talk about whether they would try to switch to the Des Moines, which has some other challenges, including very high ammonia and kind of this yo-yo of microcystin that's been bouncing all over, or if they'll stay with the raccoon. But this will be one of the first times we've ever had to try to treat microcystin, even at small concentration. So Kyle just texted me that we are going to stay on the raccoon, and at least for the time being, attempt to treat. Now, let's be very clear. This is source water. It's not the finished water. We have not detected anything in the finished drinking water. We don't expect that we will right now at this concentration, but we'll have to see where this goes. We'll be keeping a very close eye on it. We are planning to notify the rest of the board, just that we're seeing this in the raccoon and that we are going to go down the path of treatment and removal to the best of our ability. As you all know, we don't have a process that's specifically targeted at removing microcystin, but we're hopeful that based on some of the things we've learned in the last few months that we can do a good job there. And then we're also going to let the wholesale customers know that it's there and we need to treat it. It's not in the finished water. If we do detect it in the finished water, though, our plan calls for almost an immediate move to stage three of our water shortage plan, which is prohibition of lawn watering. So I think everyone would agree that having safe drinking water is more important than having green grass. So, but that's a big step. We won't take that step lightly. We want people to be aware and advised and up to speed on exactly what's going on. But that's really top of mind for all of us here at Des Moines Water Works today. So Andrea, I think that's the one thing I'll share today, unless there are questions about that or anything else.
Hey, Ted, I saw the story, I think it was on the 4th, that was it on KCCI on their site?
Which story?
I think what? It was picked up by national media, too.
Yeah, I wondered what the impetus was for that story.
You know, that was an Associated Press story, and I think that was just, that was a reporter who was interested in the situation, broader than just specifically Des Moines. They kind of focused on Des Moines and got some information. There's a great quote in the story from Bill Blubaugh, person who does all of our sampling every day. He did a great job sharing his passion for water quality. Then there were some quotes from other folks outside of Waterworks Circle and even outside of Iowa. The one that kind of got our attention was a University of Minnesota professor who said that, especially in terms of nitrate and you know, nutrient contamination, you won't find any worse water quality than we have to deal with in Des Moines. And I think that just really puts a point on what we deal with every single day. And today is a perfect example where we're trying to decide which one of our impaired rivers to try to make into drinking water. It's a challenging situation.
I also saw that they put out beach alerts over the weekend. And I think there's some real opportunity for partnering on water quality with those communities that can't use their beaches. And I forget which one it was. They just put $14 million into their lake.
Yeah, I think that was Lake Darling.
Pardon?
I think it was Lake Darling.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it before, and now they can't use it.
Right. Millions of dollars of investment, but it's the nutrients that are continuing to come in that are the problem.
Well, so how's the?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wondered how the water level was with the rains.
You know, this morning I checked, the Raccoon River was flowing about 400 cubic feet per second. The thing is, though, that the norm for this time of year, the norm is sort of coming down. So, you know, earlier in the spring we were flowing 300 when we should have been 4,000. Now we're flowing 400 when more typical would be about 2,000. So I kind of feel like we're hanging in there on the water level. We've got enough water. It's just that now it's The algae is really blooming, and we don't know if last week's rains flushed something down towards us. You know, maybe we'll get lucky and this will be short-lived, or if it's the beginning of a long summer of high concentrations. But the water levels are actually hanging in there. They're not going up, they're not improving, but they're hanging in there.
I'm sorry, Andrea, I interrupted you, so.
No, I think I was just gonna make a general comment about how it's going to be interesting how when, you know, how the conversation may shift or change as the regionalization discussion kind of comes to a close, that this is a problem that that isn't gonna go away and can't be swept under the rug or dealt with another time, that it continues to grow and get larger and more impounded. And, you know, one of the things that was mentioned in the article about the, you know, the drilling is how it could have an impact in depleting aquifers and then what impact does that have to the rest of the region and beyond just drinking water and hoping that we start to make some traction in this conversation and find real solutions sooner than later.
Agreed.
But I believe that covers everything that was on our agenda today. And is anybody?
Yeah, the only other thing is public comment. Oh, sure. I'm not sure that we have any public here, but I guess we could just throw that out.
Yep, thank you for catching that.
Not seeing anything, Andrea, I think that does bring us to the end of the agenda.
Great. Well, it was good seeing your all faces and look forward to our next meeting. I guess the next official meeting would be, is there a finance committee meeting this month?
There is going to be a finance and audit committee meeting on Tuesday of next week.
All right.
Via Zoom again.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ann.
Bye.
Thanks, Ted. Bye.
Bye. Bye.